Welcome to Fossils by Firelight, a series of conversations with South Africa's geological legends, where they unearth their discoveries, learnings, memories, interesting stories, and maybe a few tall tales to chronicle our history and inspire the next generation of geological heroes. Welcome back to another episode of Fossils by Firelight. I'm flying solo today. Sifiso's off doing important geological things, probably looking far more professional in the field than the rest of us ever manage. Today is a special one. We're marking the retirement of someone who has shaped the Geological Society of South Africa for nearly 16 years, Dr. Craig Smith, outgoing executive manager of the GSSA. Craig, in your most recent executive manager's column in the GeoBulletin, you wrote about how the profession is evolving, and borrowing a line from Sheldon Cooper, is geology still a real science? I have to ask, after all these years, how would you answer that?
Geology is a real science, for sure. One of my sons is a physicist, and he and I continually argue about this. But me being older, I always win, of course. And it's a real science, particularly so in South Africa. Most of our membership is employed in industry, and many, even PhDs and MSCs. Whereas in the U.S. and Europe, they mostly go on and get employed in universities or government. So certainly in South Africa, geology is very much seen as a science. Absolutely.
And as a typical geologist, there is no yes or no answer to that.
Absolutely not. They come in all shapes and sizes.
So before we dig into your past, how are you feeling stepping into retirement mode? Are you still waking up at 5 a.m. every morning?
No. Absolutely not. I tend to be a late night owl, and I get up late in the morning. Hardly ever before 7, unless I have to. So as you can see, I'm not much of a field geologist anymore. I started my career as a field geologist, but soon gravitated to the laboratories.
Okay, so let's hit rewind. Before the leadership, before the GSSA, before the diamonds. Back to the days when you were just Craig with a rock hammer and unlimited optimism. Was it the science itself that drew you into geology? Or was there a moment, a person, or even a rock that hooked you?
The reason I got into geology was largely good fortune. I grew up in an area in northern Illinois that was glaciated, and there were no outcrops. So I never saw an outcrop of a rock until I was in my teens. I don't recall it being that interesting, actually. But when I got to the University of Illinois, I still hadn't decided what I wanted to do, except that I knew it wasn't going to be general studies. So I got down the list and got to G and thought I'd try it. And it's worked out fabulously.
Okay, so everybody in geology has that one field story. You know the one? Your friends are tired of hearing it, but it still makes you laugh or possibly shudder. What's yours, or what are you willing to put on record?
Well, I think it's the work I did in Wyoming. You couldn't do it these days the way we did it then. I got dropped off in a field area about 5 miles from the nearest cabin with no means of transport, and I was on my own. I don't even think I had a first aid kit, to be honest. And I spent 2 months walking around this field area looking for kimberlites and dikes and things like that. And I never saw a person. And that's quite amazing, actually, to go 2 months without seeing anyone. But I enjoyed it thoroughly. The field area was spectacular, in my opinion. Not in the opinion of my fellow graduate students, however. I got voted the world's worst field area 2 years running. But these guys were used to working in the Rocky Mountains and, you know, in scenic environments. This was much more like the Karoo.
And then why South Africa? What brought you here and what convinced you to stay?
I got involved in kimberlite studies at Colorado State, and that got me to the second kimberlite conference in New Mexico. And that's all the South Africans were here. Jan Kramers at the time was about to move off to the University of Zimbabwe in Harare. And they were looking for someone to come in as a doctoral candidate and an employee. And I wasn't going to get a deal like that in the U.S. So I thought, why not? I'd be here for a couple of years. I recall saying yes over the second beer. I was hired in a bar. And, I figured I'd be here for a couple of years tops. And here I am.
Indeed.
Yeah, that was in 1977, when that Kimberlite conference, I think it was 77, yeah. Oh, let's see. I mean, my career goes back a long way. I've been a cross-dresser. Academic industry. I've worked, I did two postdocs. I've had experience in Germany, which was quite interesting. I guess you can divide my career into stages like that. Started out doing research, field to lab-based stuff, research to industry-related stuff, and then switching from a sort of professional scientist type of role to a managerial role. That took quite a change. I remember some of the stories, and maybe this is inappropriate, but so we might have to edit this out.
But, maybe not.
Maybe not. I recall when I left for De Beers, I was hired at Anglo American Research Laboratories. I took over from Mike DeWitt, who was running the lab at that stage, and this was my first introduction to corporate society. My first meeting was an eye-opener. The then head of Anglo-American Research Laboratories had a real reputation, and I was kind of shell-shocked when I walked out of that first meeting. I'd never imagined anything could be that contentious. And I remember walking out with another member of staff at one stage at another one of these meetings. The meeting was held at 120 decibels. And it went on for an hour, hour and a half. And it was, I like to think I gave as good as I got. But we walked out of that meeting and looked up at my colleague. He looked back and he said, "That's the best meeting I've ever had." And I thought, wow, what have I got myself into? But that was my first shock. But I survived it.
And then the GSSA years. So 16 years in any organization leaves you with a treasure trove of stories. Without naming names, can you tell me the most interesting membership email you've ever received? And you don't need to name names.
No, I won't. I'm still receiving them. That's a tough one. Probably a series of emails from various people on the complaint side. We've seen some interesting complaints, most of which have gone nowhere. And what we found is that you have to be very careful about the complaints because the complainant is not always the victim. And we've had some interesting cases in that regard, including one where a guy used the wrong GPS coordinate. Which affected the development, and the developer, who is well known around Cape Town, decided to take this further.
So I once had a question where a geologist asked me if we need both latitude and longitude.
Oh dear.
Talking about the strangest things, what is the strangest object that's ever appeared on your desk, geological or otherwise? The GSSA office must have seen some really strange things.
Yeah, even before that, I got involved at one stage in the isotope geochemistry of Steenkamp's Kraal, which everybody knows here. And it turns out that deposit contains so much thorium that you couldn't dilute it well enough to get a decent analysis. So that was a pretty strange rock. I think one of the strangest moments... And a lot of geologists have had these moments. We had a couple of people walk into the office when we were still in the Chamber of Mines. They had a prospect. What do they do next? So I said, hire a consultant. And then I said, and the consultant is going to cost you such and such amount of money. And the guy sat there and their eyes got big and they said, but we're only high school teachers. So somehow, despite all the regulations and rulings and all the politics, two high school teachers from Limpopo got awarded a prospecting license and had no idea what to do with it. Stuff like that. And we've had a couple of those.
You've led the society through significant change, digital transformation, outreach, and professionalism. What achievements make you proudest?
I think getting a degree of financial stability into the place and operating the society as a professional body. The GSSA and other societies in South Africa are in an interesting transitional space. A similar society in the US or Europe would have 30,000, 40,000 members. We have 3,000. And we're big in South Africa. Many of them have less than 50. How do you make something like that financially sustainable and still deliver results? The GSSA is at that cusp area between financial viability and size of staff to be able to deliver what they should be delivering. And I think we've done pretty well at that.
And you touched on the GSSA's role in wider geoscience community. How has that shifted since you took over?
I think there's a lot more emphasis on geoheritage. We have quite a lot of projects going on around the country, and a lot of people are involved on a local level, doing some very good work. We don't have a national strategy, and the GSSA just doesn't have the resources to implement or drive change. But I think there's been an increased amount of interest in things geoheritage, which is why I think it's going to be an important point going forward. Communication with society at large. Geologists have, by and large, not been very good at that.
And what other roles could we play in helping people connect with geology?
Moving into the school system. We haven't been able to do that. There are people around like Wendy Taylor in Cape Town who do this. There's been some REI grant money awarded to people to do this, but it's really on a piecemeal basis. And we know there's interest, but we don't have the capacity to serve to that community. Another thing that goes along with that, we routinely, on an annual basis, get calls from parents whose son or daughter is interested in geology, and can we get them experience on a mine while they're still at matric? And of course, this is impossible. You can't even get first and second years in now. And that's one of the unsolved, unresolved problems.
So maybe career fairs, that kind of thing?
Yeah, but that still doesn't get you underground.
And that is a big problem.
It's a huge problem. We have kids coming out of fourth year geology who've never been into a mine before. And that's sad.
Yeah, something to work towards.
Hmm.
And looking ahead, what core values do you hope the GSSA maintains?
Well, I would hope it would be the core values we were founded on in 1895.
That sounds perfect.
I think corruption is a problem in the resource industries, and not just the resource industries in South Africa. And I like to think we've stayed on the right side of that. But it is a problem going forward. Governance, that sort of thing. Financial stability, and continuing to deliver to the community at large.
I like that. Let's zoom out from the past 16 years to what comes next.
I have no idea.
Okay, right. So you've told me that you're a bit of an AI skeptic. But here we are, with ChatGPT helping you out these questions. Should I be worried about my job, or you yours, or are we both safe for now?
Yes, you should be worried, but not because of AI. There's going to be lots of changes going forward anyway. And if you don't acquire new skills, you're going to be out of luck. So a career these days, not just in geology or the earth sciences in general, but a career these days means, I mean, there are no roadmaps, basically. So you better be flexible. You better not be in it just for the money. Going forward, it needs to be a continuous learning path. When you get your degree from a university and maybe go on and get a master's or even a PhD, that is a ticket for maybe year one of your employment. Year two, you have no idea where it's going to go. I've been an academic. I've been an explorationist. I've been a laboratory manager. And I've been a professional society manager, which is a pretty unique position, actually. All of those things, they're sort of progression of steps. All of those involve different skills, different talents, different networks. So, yeah, the throwing AI into the mix, I'm not sure about it. There's a huge amount of money being thrown at it in the world today. There's been some calculations to suggest that there's no return on this for the several trillion dollars you're going to throw at it. There will be more losers than winners from a financial sense and from a corporate sense. Will it help us in geology? And the answer is yes, if it's used right. I mean, you can do a huge amount of research in a very short amount of time if you ask the right questions. I can envision AI coming into its own 7-kilometer gold, for example. What's our deepest mine now? About 5? And it can't get much deeper and still put people down there safely. So robotics, AI, big data, they will benefit people who take them up in the right way. But I also worry that let's trash the legal profession. Lawyer comes into his own. Mining entrepreneur decides he doesn't need any geologists or mining engineers, and he's going to do it all with AI. That's a disaster waiting to happen. So yeah, there's good and bad things. I am a skeptic in the sense that I maybe have a little bit more pessimism about the future than optimism.
Okay, so moving on from there, what does excite you most about where the profession is heading?
Well, speaking from a laboratory point of view, the equipment we're seeing in the laboratories is getting better and better and better. I did my PhD at VITS in isotope geochemistry. I mean, the equipment we had available to us then, it's a different planet now. How many people here have ever used an expanded scale chart recorder, for example? I mean, most people don't even know what it is.
I don't know what it is.
We had mass spectrometers that still had vacuum tubes in them.
Sounding a little bit more familiar.
But the stuff available today, yes, it's expensive, but it can do magnificent stuff. And that will continue to develop. So I see big futures in mineralogy, analytical mineralogy, analytical geochemistry, big improvements there. I'm a little bit worried about the lack of field experience. I think that with every year that goes by, I fear that our students are getting less field experience. I don't know. I haven't measured that. I just get the sense that that's the case.
And talking about generations, what do you hope the next generation of South African geologists will carry forward from your generation legacy?
I would hope they don't lose sight of the achievements of the past. And also data. We hear far too many stories of data being lost on existing mines. I had an experience in China at one stage. We took a trip through China, which was pretty interesting. And we went to one, they do have kimberlites with diamonds in China. And we went to one that was still operating on a hand-to-mouth basis. But we walked into a core shed. It was completely trashed. It happened during the Cultural Revolution, the days of Mao, when you didn't need any of this stuff, according to the politicians. And it was, all this core was scattered on. I mean, it was the history of the Kimberlite right there. And that Kimberlite mine probably has closed early because of loss of that information. So it's just an example. I worry about that.
Right. Before we let you ride off into the sunset, let's talk legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And we've really started on this. What do you hope your legacy will be within the GSSA and the broader geoscience community?
I would hope that I would be seen to have been a keeper of the keys, a facilitator for the journal GeoBulletin, the newsletter, a good staff, and also, I mean, we run this society on a shoestring, really. But I would hope efficiency of the operations would be one of the things that people would remember. I'm the second professional manager that the GSSA has had. Leopold Bosch was the first. And prior to Leopold, there was one or two staff members that were poorly paid. There was no professional oversight. And it was the society, quite frankly, was a bit of a club for most of its existence. It's not that anymore, by any means. And I would hope that would continue.
So with Tanya Marshall taking over from you, have you realized that all executive managers are in diamonds?
Leopold wasn't.
Okay.
Leopold was the exception. Well, the answer to that is that, South Africa has its fair share of diamond geologists. And there are kimberlite geologists and diamond geologists, and there are researchers. It's a great, Southern Africa is a great place to be if you're involved in upper mantle research and diamond exploration.
So we're talking about your legacy, Craig.
Mm.
And for me, you are the one constant of the GSSA.
Mm.
You were there right from when I joined council,
yeah,
helping me navigate committees and VP positions. So your legacy for me will always be that you were that one constant.
Yeah, it might be argued that I've stayed too long to become that constant. Maybe you don't need that. Maybe, change is good, provided it's driven in the right direction. And the longer one is in a position like this, the harder change becomes. That's a given. And it's unsettling to the staff. Doesn't matter who it is. Now, the GSSA has had an advantage in this, in that we've had a relatively consistent, constant staff component for the last 10, 15 years, actually. We've only recently added a new staff member. That's Kate James. And we know her. She knows us. So we don't operate like a normal company with lots of turnover. So the president's, when I started, the president's term were 1 year. Then we switched to 2 years because you can't get anything done in 1 year. So the one advantage that this has had with a relatively stable staff is that our staff have learned how to cope with different presidents. And different presidents come in different flavors. It's quite amazing, actually, to watch this. Sometimes you tear your hair out with it, and other times you think, oh, this is a really good thing. But all presidents come in, I mean, there's a multitude of flavors. I think in recent years, you're out of the consulting business, really. So is Tanya. Steve McCourt was an academic. He was the first academic we've had in a while. We've done pretty well with the male-female mix. We haven't done so well, at least in terms of presidents, with the white-non-white mix. But we've had our fair share, and they've all been pretty good. In fact, it's been 15, 16 years of relatively little conflict. And that's, thinking back on it, that's quite amazing.
That is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That is pretty amazing.
Yeah, particularly with the change in presidents, change in flavors.
Mm. Okay, and now that you're retiring, what's the first thing you're absolutely not going to do? I'm guessing the inbox detox must feel glorious.
Absolutely. Monday morning is a circus with all the emails coming through. And for the last two years actually, I've tried hard not to come into this office on the weekends. So Saturday and Sunday is the time off, but I pay for that on Monday morning. The email detox is going to be a real benefit, yeah. I'm sure I'll still have to get onto it a few times a week, and I expect the transition it won't be a sudden break. It will be an easing off.
Well, you're not leaving us totally.
No.
Good. Lifetime membership.
Yeah.
So on behalf of Louise and the Fellows Committee, I'd like to give you this award for your long service.
Here you are. Thank you. It's well wrapped, that's for sure.
That was Sally. She did a great job.
That's very nice. That will go. I've got one from De Beers as well.
So, Craig, thanks for sharing your stories and your humor and for your years of service to both the Geological Society of South Africa and the broader geoscience community. On behalf of the GSSA and all of us in the field, congratulations on your retirement.
Well, thank you very much.
And thanks for helping strengthen the foundations of South African geology for generations to come. You've been listening to Fossils by Firelight, featuring Dr. Craig Smith, outgoing executive manager of the Geological Society of South Africa. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you around the next time.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.